I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Axis. I'm at Axis offices in Midrand to talk to Axis executive Tracy Maynard about something that's very topical in South Africa today, and that's the importance of ethical leadership and good corporate governance. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Duncan.
So I don't think I need to rehash the headlines of the last 18 to 24 months. A big JSE-listed IT services company that was caught up in alleged government corruption, a big ERP software vendor that was paying Gupta middlemen, controversies involving big auditing and consulting companies, and even a big local telecommunications operator that got swept up in it. The list, unfortunately, is rather long. How did we get into this mess, Tracy? How did corporate South Africa allow itself to be caught up in the state capture narrative?
Great question. I think a lot of businesses are under pressure to perform. A lot of customers, end customers, have a technology requirement they want to fulfill. And there's a vendor in the chain as well that wants their technology to be preferred over everything else. So our role at Axis is to make sure that we have fair and transparent pricing, for instance, across our channel. We have various partners in different segments. And the challenge, I think, with wanting to get any good enterprise end customer's business is to make sure that you've pushed every part of the chain you can to get the best possible deal. And I think what can happen is there's pressure along the chain to make sure you are getting the best deal for your organization.
You know, these obviously there's the, we know about the stuff that's happened, the Guptas, et cetera, et cetera. And we know that criminality has taken place, including in the sector. And perhaps more seriously for the companies themselves, there is severe reputational damage that is inflicted from this sort of behavior. Do you think there was a feeling perhaps during this period in South Africa's history that, well, actually, why don't we do it because we can get away with it? The government is doing it. Should we just take a chance?
Yeah, I mean, I read articles daily, weekly, monthly. And in fact, I've stopped buying the Sunday Times on a Sunday because that first headline I see is something about corruption, and it's something to do with the misappropriation of funding, and I've just declined to even read that. And so I think there's a lot of negative stuff going on, and I think because we don't see those culprits taken to task and we don't see action taken as a corporate South Africa, we go, well, if the politicians that our country has voted for are doing this and nothing happens, perhaps if I do it, nothing will happen.
Mm. And that's the danger. It's almost, the view almost becomes, well, this is part of the game. We need to do this.
Sure, and I think if you get smart about hiding it and being less transparent, the more people think that it will go unnoticed.
Yeah.
And I always think about the people at those organizations that have no idea what their senior leadership is up to, that have to go to work every day, wear that brand, either in their email address or in their clothing or on their backpack, notebook, carry bag that they carry around, being proud that they work for this organization, and yet they're reading bad press about what they do. So we are particularly super conscious about the reputational impact, only because it takes so long to recover from any bad press. And how do you do that in a way that is fair to your employees? Is you upfront and you're transparent about the rules. And I think what happened earlier on this year is perhaps those individuals weren't aware what the rules were. And the essence really of our discussion today is how do we make those rules transparent to all the parties in the chain. Sometimes there's an element of a certain part of the organization that know what the rules are that perhaps work with that particular vendor, but from an operations perspective, in certainly in our business, we've got many people doing many different brands, and our role and our obligation to our market is to say every one of our operations people have been trained on what's considered compliant with this particular vendor.
What's really sad, I suppose, is that, and we've seen it in some of these high-profile cases here in South Africa, including the one perhaps you're alluding to now. There's a few bad apples that do bad things, and then there's a reputational impact and a massive fallout which affects the entire organization. And could it end up actually costing people their jobs, people who are doing good, not breaching corporate governance rules, et cetera, who actually fall the victim to the one or two bad apples who are doing the bad stuff.
Sure, and often it's people lower down in the organization that don't always get the insight that they need. And that's why from a vendor compliance point of view and the contracts we have with our vendors, we're obliged to do training on what is expected across the whole chain of people that engage with that vendor, whether it be someone who quotes, whether it be someone who sells, or whether it be someone technical, or whether it be someone in administration or operations, all sectors of our business need to make sure we've at least completed training online, or at least got some evidence that we've got a certificate of some kind to show we've gone through the process. Because one thing we don't want to do is say, oh, I didn't know, as a distributor, and it is our role to know.
Yeah.
And the partners expect us to know.
Ignorance is not an excuse.
Yes. And they expect us to know. They expect us to be fully aware. And the idea is if we're compliant, our partners are compliant.
Yeah.
And I take that as a good principle to work from. And our partners expect us to know everything about the vendor. Mm-hmm. Even though we have 54 brands in our stable, there's some of them, especially the American vendors, that are particularly pedantic about that compliance. And if we follow the rules throughout our business, I think we can... we can certainly get that right. And one thing we do really well is make sure that those vendors, and we have documented certifications that are held with the vendor and held with Access. And the idea is if anyone came to us from an auditing point of view and said, have you completed the relevant training, we can confidently sit there and say to the vendor, we absolutely have.
Mm. And I suppose the American companies are particularly aware, attuned to these requirements, given the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which is a particularly onerous piece of legislation, which states that if you are committing any sort of corruption or commercial crime in a country beyond the United States' borders, never mind inside the United States itself, you are you're liable.
And I mean, South Africa is obviously a flag for some of the American vendors, and Africa is a continent.
Yeah.
We flagged a lot.
Mm.
Every now and again, we will get asked to either submit our audited financials, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And then every now and again, one of the vendors will do an unannounced audit. And what an unannounced audit is, you have 21 days where they notice you, and then within 5 days of that notification, they give you a date that they arrive. So even if you wanted to try and hide something, you actually couldn't.
Mm.
And I find those audits particularly welcoming, because you see a lot. You see a lot about suggestions that they have to improve your business. And often they're an outside auditing firm, so they're not vendor people.
Mm.
So they really have no idea about how we operate. But
so they appoint an external auditor to come in and look at this. It's not internal compliance people. Okay.
And what's amazing is they give you a segment of records that they want to validate, and then they canvass people across the organization, not only the business unit that works hands-on with the vendor, but they try and extend their scope outside of that just to validate if that compliance is in fact happening or not.
Interesting.
And it is interesting because you get a full report back. And I find those, as I said, really welcoming, because you probably pick up things that perhaps you thought you were doing, and the version of what they consider compliant is maybe got a capital C and ours has a small C, but we think we're doing it. And there's, I think companies should embrace that as a positive thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I welcome audits, and people are typically quite mortified with the scope of work that it entails and the number of people it consumes. And it's over a 3-week period. It's not just three days.
It's intensive, yeah.
It's intense, and you can probably improve as a business. And I think it's a good thing for all of corporate South Africa to embrace that feedback as a way to improve, not as a negative against your organization. And what we do is when we get those results as an organization, as Access and as part of Alviva Group, we find a way to put that on some sort of risk register or make it elevated within the organization that this was picked up and this is what we've agreed from an action going forward.
Have you seen an increase in the number of those IT vendor audits in light of the headlines we've seen over the last 18 months?
We have seen audits prior to that, so without the headlines. And what we've seen subsequent to that is there's more spot checks now, not people getting on a plane and rushing over to South Africa.
Yeah.
There are more online requests through a compliance email from the vendor saying, we're doing a spot check on this order, kindly send us all the relevant documentation. Mm. So they're doing it weekly.
That's good.
And we get emails often. And if you don't give them the feedback they want, their reply is, this is unsatisfactory for what we're looking for, kindly resend. And you've got 48 hours from that time to get back to them with the right information. So they,
or else what happens?
Or else. Well, we get these emails that says, we're unsatisfied with what you've submitted. You've got 48 hours. And if you don't, they promptly remind you that your 48 hours is up. And then when that's up, they go,
further action.
Please reply. So then they start sending formal letters. And fortunately for Access, I haven't experienced any of that in my career.
Yeah.
I think what we do a good job at is making sure we keep evidence in terms of a trail, i.e. we get a reseller's purchase order. And if we get the end customer's purchase order to support that, the vendor is typically happy.
Mm.
What the vendor sanity check in my experience entails is you just don't have a partner placing an order on a distributor that hasn't had an end customer purchase order to support. Because what that means then is that you have this in limbo product sitting there that's got no place to go, and we have to pay the vendor, and then, of course, the reseller has to pay Access. And then you have a situation where the end customer, not having an correlating purchase order,
yeah,
it might just be one of those fictitious things, and that's the part we all try and avoid, because yes, that's when it just gets messy.
Yes.
So having an end customer PO with a reseller PO is something we drive hard. There are tales in the channel for the last 20, 30 years where vendors have known to put pressure on distributors to place orders. We're inclined to take those cases very cautiously, and make sure the company is not at risk.
Yeah.
There's an implication for the reseller and the distributor should something like that happen, and we're super conscious of protecting our channel, right, as much as we can.
And this isn't something that's just emerged, of course. I mean, there have been lots of headlines and narrative around this in the last 18 months, but I can remember stuff all the way back to the 1990s where these sort of dodgy relationships were going on involving some other JSE-listed companies at the time. So it's unfortunately a constant narrative, but there are clearly some very important lessons here for corporate South Africa and for the IT sector. What sort of governance checks and balances, in your view, in broad terms, should companies put in place to ensure they aren't found wanting?
I think the key part for us is the technology going to do what it's supposed to do at the end customer? You know, As a distributor that distributes many different enterprise technologies across hardware and software, we need to make sure that is the end customer going to get what he's paying for, and we make sure that it's an outcome that the end customer wants, because at the end of the day, that's where the reputation, I think, starts. So if an end customer has a super experience with a partner that delivers good service, authentic services that they are in fact offering and are getting paid for, and then the order gets placed to distribution, that's just an absolutely perfect scenario.
Yeah.
We do have instances where perhaps the partners haven't fully fulfilled on their services agreement, and in distribution we offer services as best as we can. We just don't have the margin to have those high-skilled, high-expensive paid architects to help a partner. We really work with our partners to drive that technical understanding, but what we try and make sure is that the outcome for the end customer is the one that benefits at the end of the day. After all, that technology brand is the one that end customer will talk about, hopefully, if it's a positive experience across the whole organization. And I think a bad experience with one services partner, it's not uncommon to have more than one services partner across different types, whether it be security, whether it be your email, whether it be anything else, there's more than one service provider, but I always encourage end customers to just make sure they're doing what you've paid for. And it doesn't mean auditing them. It means if you have a checklist of services you believe you're getting, you know, hold those resellers accountable for what they've told you that they're going to get you. Because as a distributor, to fall back on us, sometimes it's very hard for us to pick up that expectation. We have a reseller base because we want to work with them and their skills, and they've got the time and capacity to get to a few end customers. We just have many partners across many segments, and the scale of what we do as Axis is sometimes tough to get to every end customer.
Yeah, and very often in these cases, and I think particularly involving public sector contracts, is you see a fixer or a middleman getting involved. Is it more difficult to secure government business than it is to secure business in the private sector? Do you see more instances of corruption? Because certainly I think the perception out there is that the public sector is perhaps more corrupt than the private sector. Is that a correct perception? Is it more difficult to do clean business with government?
It is, and I tell you why I would agree with that is the government typically wants a portion that has the word discount in it, and I use that in inverted commas because a discount can be seen in many ways. A lot of the American vendors see a discount as something they don't offer, because typically you don't want the discount to be put to the price of the technology just from a brand impact point of view, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, any vendor doesn't want to be seen as offering discounts, and I think if you start, what we found and certainly in experiences I've had is excessive has been a word that they've asked for, and I tell you what I mean by that. They ask for a percentage of the total price, which in my mind is excessive, and that's the red flag for me is if you're asking for an excessive discount or you're asking for something that's out of the scope of what the agreement is, we tend to see the flag.
So they're looking for a discount so they can pad margins elsewhere, or?
Well, I'm not entirely sure on all of that. What they tend to do is ask for a discount because they are public sector and the size of the deal is certainly one to be acknowledged. And along the way, they feel that they need some attention and they need some extra discount to facilitate the deal. And the challenge, of course, we have with distribution in terms of public sector versus corporate South Africa is how quickly we get paid. I mean, at the end of the day, mm-hmm. how do you get paid from public sector and how you get paid from corporate are very different. And the challenge we have as a business is making sure that we have a very clear idea of when we are going to get paid. There's been many contracts from government I can share with you where we've been paid promptly. Mm-hmm. And those have been really encouraging deals. And all the work we've done and the effort we've made, we've got paid for that. But there have been others, and I think it's just certain departments in government. I don't think it's all of them.
Yeah.
Where they just tend to just drag it out. And I think the decision we make as a company is it something we want to do, and will there be enough margin for us to carry that debt for 150 days?
Yes.
And if so, then what pricing would we need? Mm-hmm. And so the excessive part might not seem excessive for the end customer asking, but for us it makes it tough to drop your margin and get the vendor to facilitate if you're going to get paid in 150 days.
Yeah. So I know you've alluded to this already, but a company like Axis is obviously working in quite a complex chain of vendors, customers, resellers, etc. Probably much more so than a typical IT services company that might contract directly with a corporate end user. Does that make ethical behavior, ethical leadership much more challenging, more difficult to do?
It does, and I think a lot of us have got a couple of hundred years of experience in this channel. Mm-hmm. And I think what corporate South Africa can do is you know, phone a friend and ask for help. And I think one thing as a business we're super conscious of is do we make sure we are consistent with how these requests are asked of us, and are we transparent when we have that request? We have a gifts register at Axis as an example, where if you get a gift above a value we perceive to be a reasonable value and you get something that's higher than that, is do you actually declare that? And what we have with a gift register that we have internally is it's the time of year where Christmas gifts are going to start coming, as an example. And, you know, whether you get the Johnny Walker Blue or you get the Johnny Walker Black, we still have to declare that as a leadership team. So I think what can happen is gifts can be misconstrued. Mm. And I say to our account managers often, and Craig and I talk about it a lot, is are you sure that the reason they're giving it to you is for the reason that it's intended? We've had many experiences, and I looked after some hardware brands in my career, where they give you one of their devices to use as an ambassador of their brand. And one thing I'm super conscious of is I find it difficult to accept that, because it's not a company asset that I've made use and clear and transparent about. So we'd rather use that in a reseller incentive or a reseller giveaway and get that technology out into the channel where the partner can actually experience what these devices do. Mm. If we had to accept every vendor that offered us a product to try, and I'm talking about hardware products specifically, we would be in a place where we just have so many devices in our own homes. And as a business, we're super conscious that we try not to make use of a product in our own interest. We'd rather make use of it in the interest of the channel.
Mm.
And if we can sell more because we've got a warehouse full of that particular product, then that's the outcome we're looking for.
I'm sure your resellers would like a couple of bottles of Johnny Blue.
Yes, I'm sure they would.
But take us through a scenario of where unethical conduct might creep into a big tender, for example. And how do you decide what amounts to unethical conduct and what doesn't? I'm imagining it's not always so clear cut.
It's not. I think the challenge can also be where you're getting a software license, as an example, and part of that license includes services.
Yeah.
Where you kind of in a position where you need to show probably two prices and not just one sort of combined price. Because what can happen is when you place the software part of that on a vendor, it's seen as a certain number, and then the services is the difference, on the understanding that there's a contract related to what those services entail, so you invoice the higher price. And I think one has to be careful when you're bundling a couple of items and only showing one price, is how do you make sure that if you unbundle that, you have a price that's directly related to the service that's being delivered. Our challenge at Axis is we make sure we show them separately, because then we have an invoice where the reseller is not confused. And if they choose to invoice their end customer with a separate SLA, then that's great. I think it can be easy to not see the wood from the trees in a situation like that. We tend to see the actual physical product, as in the software license and all the hardware, separately, purely because they would be separate line items if you want to really get pedantic on our system. I think how a partner creates an invoice to his end customer would be the part that would be most tricky. In other words, if he doesn't have a list of services he's going to do to make up that extra, he would have to explain that to the end customer.
Yeah. What are some of the other red flags that you see?
A couple of things we see is where we have senior people wanting us to employ nieces and nephews and children. And I think one of the things we try and do as a business is we try and encourage and uplift graduates into corporate South Africa. It's our duty to train them. It's our duty for them to experience this. And I think the challenge really comes in where you have a deal pending and then that particular individual asks you if you can employ a nephew or a niece or a cousin in lieu of the order that you're going to get. So so for me, that's a flag immediately, and not because the guy's deliberately being dishonest, but there's a perception and a...
How do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think if we had to put them into a different business, would that be a different thing? Probably not, because the individual's asked you to do it. So for me, it's a very clear line. We absolutely wouldn't do that. You probably won't get the deal, right? Because you've now declined. We often have things with incentives, Duncan, and this has come up quite a lot, right? Is we often incentivize our partners to drive a business outcome that is a revenue-based one, and we hope to do well. And I think the challenge with incentives is how do you define what is an incentive or a bribe? Yeah. And one thing we've worked hard at Axis, and in fact across the Alviva group, is we've made sure to distinct between the two. Is an incentive a bribe? Well, you know, it really depends what you want out of it. You know, if someone, I mean, I can remember a case in the last 18 months where the person said, I'll give you the software order if you give me one of your notebooks for free. And it's interesting how people think that it's sort of the same thing, you know. Yeah. We'll just, if I give you this, will you give me that? And I think that's a red flag immediately.
Yeah.
I think incentives is one that will always continue. I think vendors enjoy incentivizing our partners, maybe from a brand awareness point of view. But what I often ask is, you know, does it give you the outcome you're looking for? Because the perception then is that they will know something's coming, especially at half year end and full year ends of these big corporates. And then they wait for the vendors to offer something. And I think the days of many years ago where we had many trips and we had many incentives and we had a whole lot of margin, we could do all those things. And I think what Axis is really trying to do now is make sure that we have a less of them and really focused ones with a very specific outcome. And then the partners that participate should be rewarded. But the idea is if we don't get the brand share and the mind share that we're looking for, then we probably all haven't achieved anything. And I think what's improved over the years is that part's got better. The vendors are now really conscious about that, especially the American ones, based on everything that goes on. And they've sort of said, okay, what is our desired outcome? What do we want to achieve? If we're not going to get what we want, we just don't offer an incentive. And then you get the partners in the channel that say, well, just, you know, don't give me the incentive, just give me the discount up front.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really give you what you want, because you're ultimately driving the cost price down and then you put pressure along the way. And how do we all do all of this and still try and make money? But it's a great place to be. I mean, distribution has probably evolved over the last 20 years that I've seen it. And one thing is for sure is we're more super conscious now of red flags than we were before.
Yes. Just flowing on from what you said there, I imagine that chasing the short-term gain over the sort of rather chasing the short-term gain and doing a deal where you may be compromising ethically might seem like the best option now, because you're going to deliver the numbers, you're going to meet your budget, etc. But in the longer term, there's huge risk, obviously, and we've seen that in some of the headlines that have appeared over the last little while. Do you think some of this unethical behavior we see can actually flow from companies that are too demanding on their sales teams to meet budget?
Yeah, how desperate are you to get the number?
Exactly.
And we have many partners that contact Axis and are working on the same deal. And we have to figure out a way to be fair and transparent with the pricing. We obliged to do that. And we also need to figure out, you know, is it an order the vendor wants and the next quarter when you contact that same individual, he no longer works there? What we always try and do is build a relationship with the vendor that talks about activity in the spirit of the partnership. And what I mean by that is we're not going to be a distie that's just going to place an order to get you the goal and we have people that want to leave. That's absolutely not our intention. We have people that have been here for an average of 22 years, and I'm amazed that sometimes we have these people. And our role as a product team, as a sales team, is to make sure the product people are very connected to the vendor people. And how we make sure that happens is we're absolutely transparent about the deal and what's going down. And if there are requirements for discounts, everyone knows where we stand on that. And I think salespeople not only at the vendor, but at the partner and at a distribution need to make a call. And when we have many deals with many partners, that's probably easier. But when you've got two or three with many partners, is when the pressure starts coming. And there's some creative things that come out of those discussions, right? Some of them are, if you do this, I'll do that. Some of them are, if we help you, we'll absolutely place the order with you. So you want it badly as a distributor because it looks good on the books. You also want it to be an ethical transaction because you also want to get paid at the end of the day. So it's tough. We're super conscious about how we manage those. And one thing I really enjoy about working here is, you know, Craig Brunsden's absolutely involved in our deals. And if Craig's our managing director. Mm-hmm. And if you're not sure on what to do or how to proceed because you've now been presented with this question of would you give me this in return, we can talk to our management team about that. And I think any staff member or salesperson at a reseller or at a vendor that absolutely isn't sure is just tell someone, you know. And I think what happens sometimes is we so badly want it because we want the comm, because we've got debt to pay, that we maybe didn't make our boss aware of it. And it doesn't have to be your boss. I know some people, you know, have maybe a different view on sharing these kind of questions, and then talk to a colleague, because then you have an obligation as a colleague working with someone who's not sure what to do to tell someone about it.
I suppose in an organization like Axis, where you have these good corporate governance rules in place and the ability to talk to your boss about things that concern you, that's good. But I suppose in some other organizations, those levels of transparency, those levels of leadership are not as present. Do you think there's a role for corporate fraud, anonymous corporate fraud tip-off lines, reporting lines in organizations? Do you have one here at Axis?
Yes, so we have an anonymous hotline where you don't have to leave who you are. You can just leave the incident. And in fact, we've picked up a couple of cases where, in fact, it led to the person being dismissed because someone alerted us to what they thought was strange behavior. And strange in the world of distribution means there's something wrong with pricing and the discounting given. And when we investigated it, the person was eventually asked to leave our organization. And I think...
And you don't always want to be seen to be ratting on your colleagues. So yes. There's a need for some anonymity sometimes.
Sure. And then when it goes through, you have the option to leave a name. You don't have to, because often what happens is people sleep on it and the next day they say, no, I want to be recognized for the fact that I've raised this. And that's cool. We recognize those people. But also if you don't, because sometimes I think the characteristics of someone who's internally focused is perhaps not as outgoing as someone who's an external partner-facing person who maybe doesn't believe standing up for your rights is always a good thing. And they have the option to leave an anonymous tip-off for us. Yeah. And we've had, there's a couple of ways they can do it. Obviously, if they send an email, they'll then identify who they are. But if you have a Gmail account, maybe not. But what you have the option to do is tell us or not tell us. But what we won't tolerate is if we find out that the people in the chain were aware of it and did nothing. Mm-hmm. Because by association, we will look at the other individuals as well. And I think if we look at what's happened in the last year, you would have seen a lot of that, where one person was, you know, the fish rots from the head happened with him, but there were five or six other people that knew about it and chose to do nothing. And I think that's what festers in a corporate business is, how do you make sure that the people do ask the right questions? And our thinking is if they're trained and compliant, there shouldn't be a question. But if there is one, who do you tell and what do you do? And we always encourage that type of communication, because at the end of the day, the health and reputation of the entire channel is at stake, especially that end customer who was the one who the deal was done with. I'm super conscious of that end customer, right? Mm. And then the partner, you know, it's our duty to look after them. And where we can, we try and help our partners. But there's something about asking a question if something looks off that we encourage all our staff across all segments of our business just to raise your hand. And if you don't want to say what it is, show someone, you know, and then let's see if we can help you.
Tracy, just in conclusion then, it sounds to me, and perhaps there are other points you want to raise here, but it sounds to me like the two most important things you can do as an organization is, first of all, to have a set of rules that your employees understand. This is acceptable behavior, this is not acceptable behavior, and perhaps set that out in some sort of handbook or set of rules that are distributed within the organization. And then secondly, to have as much transparency as possible in all of your dealings with customers, with vendors, etc., to ensure that, because I guess the sort of stuff does tend to grow in where light isn't being shone, and when you have as much transparency as possible, the opportunity for corrupt practices to emerge is probably greatly reduced.
Mm. I mean, I always say to partners, because the question we get a lot is, who else is quoting on the deal?
Mm.
And we won't be sharing that, right? Because
yeah.
you don't need to know that. But what we can confidently say is that you've all got the same price.
Yes.
And I think a long time ago, perhaps there was a perception that if you were a certain size partner or a systems integrator or a value-added reseller, you would get certain privileges. And I think, that privilege is then run from the vendor side in terms of their programs, in terms of rebates they can offer a partner that's preferred in their brand. As Axis, we are as transparent as we can be. We give partners the same price. And if there's a reason that a partner believes they should be getting a better price, then we always welcome that. I mean, our door's always open. People can ask us and discuss. But the core of what we do is because there's so much confidential information, and you walked through here today, you saw how open plan it was.
Yes.
It is easy to talk about a partner and a deal when a vendor from a competitive brand or another reseller has walked in on our floor. So we have to be super conscious of not only what we say, but the emails that we share, because we have had companies where, we've shared competitive information unintentionally or not maliciously. And how does a partner make sure that they're asking the right SD? We've got emails where they've said to my competitor, and they've left the body of the email asking a competitor. Mm. So they tend to do 3 or 4 quotes, same content, 4 different distributors, and then they expect you to reply. So, we're also conscious of the fact that there are many options to buy stuff.
Yes.
And we just got to make sure that the stuff we give you is A, what you asked for, B, the price you are prepared to pay, and C, that it delivers an outcome to your end customer that we want.
So treat everyone fairly.
Yes.
And I suppose if you don't do that, you're just going to end up with a hot political situation on your hands and trying to manage expectations from all sides, and people accusing you of bias, et cetera, et cetera. So you may as well just have one policy, one open pricing policy, et cetera.
Sure. I think the challenge we have is because there's just so many deals that we know are out there and so many opportunities, is how do the partners embrace it, but how do we as a business work with those partners? It's not like we can afford to lift our nose up at an opportunity, right?
Yeah.
We want to take every opportunity we can. And that means there's going to be an element of a culture within a business with a very young sales team, with maybe not as much experience as some of our reseller partners, making sure that they are clear and transparent and accurate. Because there's also that, right? There's the mistakes. And a partner expects us to be good with our mistakes, and by the same token, we expect our partners to do the same.
Mm. Great. Well, I think this has been a fascinating and also very important discussion that I think should be happening across the sector, and probably is, in light of what has happened in the recent past. So thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today. Tracy Maynard is an executive at Axis.
Thank you.